Morning. I hope everybody is not here hoping to hear something earth-shattering or some big revelation, because I don't have it. It took a lot more time to put these data together. I'm going to show you some data from 11 years worth of pheromone trapping, and it took a lot longer, as I mentioned, to put those data together and try to make heads or tails. And I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Ray Jones, who was going to be critical in helping to analyze these data from this point forward. All right, many of you know a lot about bollworm, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time introducing bollworm, but it's an insect that continues to uniformly put pressure on cotton, uniformly overposits across cotton. We've done several demonstrations where we planted non-BT cotton and spelled something and let the bollworms differentially survive or die in the field and spell something in the non-BT cotton. So anyhow, they're important, and the BTs, thankfully, still do a fairly good job in controlling this insect. But as tolerance to those BT toxins and some of our foliar insecticides increases, if there's any other way to help predict populations in the field, we should explore that. So are we using numbers from pheromone traps to help predict this? And I just asked a couple people in the room, and the consensus is that our consultants kind of loosely use these data, right, to know when the insects are in the system. But can we do more with those data? So that's kind of the overall question of this talk. It's not new. Pheromone trapping for the heliothines has been around for decades, right? I've been doing it for a long time. You can go back into the 70s with Hart Stack. And the wire conical trap is the standard that we use. And I think most of my colleagues use the same traps. Of course, baited with lures that attract the male moths of the targeted species and require a lot of labor. They're not reliably automated yet, but Dr. Musser is going to address that in the next talk. So, as I mentioned, what do we do with the data that we collect and distribute to our clientele? I produce these charts you see here on the right side of the screen here and send them out weekly, and I think that our consultants and producers and stakeholders, folks that are in the field, kind of look at these and just make general decisions on when it's important to get out and look. So it does help to show when the moths are abundant in our systems. And of course, yeah, loosely time, elevated scouting efforts, sure. Can we do more with accurately predicting populations in the field? Maybe. But, I kind of looked through the literature, and I've got a handful of papers here, and I'll just summarize each of these papers for you. But back in the early 80s, in a Hart Stack paper, they concluded that early season capture of tobacco budworm males and traps was useful in estimating populations in the field early on. But as there were females in the field, they competed with the lures, right, in the trap. So then it just diminished the ability to estimate field density with the trap data. And then a little later in the 80s, Leonard et al. Found a positive correlation between capture of a budworm and bollworm in traps and overposition in cotton during a defined period in June and July. It kind of jives with the Hart Stack paper. And you look at something like corn in the early 90s, they had a model based on trap capture of corny worm, bollworm, that tended to overestimate damage in sweet corn. Also in the early 90s, in another experiment, they found a significant relationship between capture of male moths and traps and capture of male and female moths by hand in field corn. And then more recently in the 2000s, trap efficiency declined with male tobacco budworm moths as density of female moths increased in cotton. So that's what they found in the 80s, right? And then in another paper that's not too long ago, 5 years ago, they found that trap captures were closely associated with egg numbers in corn, but the availability of the silks was really the driver for overposition, right? So it was more tied to crop phenology than anything else. So we probably got some of that going on in cotton as well. So anyhow, some of the methods, we've got a 2,400-acre facility where I work, and I've got 20 pheromone traps that I've checked for 11 years at this facility. 10 of those are for Zaya. And I've got two of those 10 that are immediately adjacent to a field where I've done work with measuring bollworm damage in non-BT cotton and transgenic plots during that same period of time, like immediately adjacent to those two traps. So what we're going to do is try to do an overall analysis with these 10 traps that represent that entire area you see pictured here. And then a separate analysis looking at just the two traps that are immediately adjacent to the field. I think that's probably the best approach. We haven't got there yet. I'll show you some preliminary stuff today. Certainly don't have a comprehensive analysis. So in that field, we did estimate damage to terminal squares, blooms, and bowls in non-BT cotton, and that's what we're going to use in these analyses. With the question, are trapping data useful for predicting damage from larvae of Zaya and cotton? And again, those analyses are ongoing. So this is kind of busy, but I just want you to just kind of see the numbers here and look at the charts, and we'll discuss a few things here. But we caught 500,000 moths in an 11-year period. So it's a lot of checking. That's a lot of moths to count in just those 10 traps. And there's a lot of variability in trap data from year to year, but there are patterns where you can see the generations. All that's very distinct. But if you look here, just look at the numbers. That's the overall number we caught that year. From 2009 to 2013, we had some significant pressure during that period of time. Just look at 2010, which is, let me get the mouse here. Here's 2010. We caught almost 100,000 moths in those 10 traps during that 1 year. And that was the year that also corresponded to the highest field pressure that I've ever seen. So caught more moths, had more pressure, and it makes sense. But look what's happened since then. Just look at the intensity of the captures. It's kind of declined in my general area. You look at 2017, you know, we barely caught any compared to a year like 2010. And we've seen a decline, and I'll show you the damage data in just a second. We've seen a decline in damage in the field as well in my local area. Now, these pheromone trap data do not represent a broad geography. I'm more and more convinced that they represent what's going on at the local level and maybe can only be used at the local level, which would be a good thing because you have a trap right beside a field and maybe you use that for predicting infestations in the field. But these are this is average boll injury in non-BT cotton. Just look at 2010, again, the same chart here. We hit 100% boll damage in the non-BT fairly early, and that's just where it stayed. You look at some of the other, it's kind of messy with some of these, but generally during that same period where we had high pheromone trap capture, we had significant boll injury, and you can see in some of the later years how that injury has gotten nowhere near 100%. So we're going to attempt to do more correlations and look at some relationships here with the pheromone trap data and the infield damage data. So what I did is I kind of put together, this is a different way of looking at the data. You've got you've got bollworms and traps per week, bollworm moths and trap per week with the blue and the green lines here across the years, the 11 years. Oops, sorry. And then the yellow line here is the highest boll damage for that year in non-BT cotton. That's shown over here on this axis. And just loosely, you can kind of see as our pheromone trap data has kind of tapered off in recent years, so has the damage in the field, right? So we're gonna do a little more. We're looking at these correlations. When you kind of plot something like mean weekly trap capture with peak boll damage in the non-BT, there's probably something here. We just have to do a little more digging, but perhaps there's a number that we can use. A weekly trap capture, and another way to look at this is the highest trap capture number per week with plotted against the peak boll damage. Perhaps there's a number we can use here to at least intensify scouting initially. I am a subscriber to when there are females in the field competing with the lures and the traps, all bets are probably off. Then you probably can't use trap data to define peaks and so forth. So anyhow, much work remaining on the data analyses, but any relationship between trap capture and infield damage from bollworm might prove useful for predicting when scouting efforts should be intensified. And the greatest potential, as I just mentioned, is likely for predicting the initial period of susceptibility due to the trap capture exceeding some yet to be determined value. So anyhow, that's it. I welcome any suggestions or comments or questions at this time. Kind of went through that quickly.
We've got plenty of time.
Yeah. We got 5 minutes. Yes.
I'm just curious what kind of
I'm sorry?
What are your ag densities per acre? Do you estimate
those? We do in some of the trial work. When we have the really heavy pressure in the traps and in the field, our egg counts are at least one per plant. At least that. Many, in 2010, it was many more than that per plant. Any other questions? Yeah, Dan. Well, no, other than what we've did with Fred and kind of looking at different trap types that he's going to talk about, no. I really am convinced that these trapping data are useful for a very local area. I don't know if they can be used broadly. Still got 4 minutes. All right, well, thank you.